Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Luke, do you know what we're starting this week with?
Is it a wee email?
It's surprise. Not, actually. Oh, it's not. It's not.
Actual surprise, hell? Surprise.
It's a nice wee review.
Ah, a nice review.
Those things we ask people to do.
Yeah, we ask people to do them. So I'm going to start reading them at the start of episodes because actually...
Oh, hell yeah.
They're quite nice.
Some pretty good ones. I've read through them. Yeah.
Does it beat the one where we were compared to the Chuckle Brothers?
No, we're not doing that one.
Nothing will beat that.
So this one is from Chauffeured Random. Says, love the podcast. I've only recently started listening to podcasts, but SciGuys is amazing. Hell, I love how they explain science things in an easy to understand way. It's really funny as well and lightens my mood whenever I listen.
That is lovely. It's so lovely, isn't it?
Shall we start the show?
Yes. Absolutely.
Hello and welcome to the SciGuys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jamp, and Luke Cutforth.
Good day.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about dislikes and that likes.
And what likes?
Dislikes and that likes.
Likes and dislikes, Luke. So we're always reminded to smash that like button, but what does it actually mean to like things? That's what we want to know.
Oh,
yeah.
I see.
And that's what we're talking about today, because this week is a Patreon vote episode, which means our patrons have voted on the topic.
They usually end up being the best episodes as well.
They usually do. Our patrons are very good, very, very astute.
Refined taste.
So first off, let's jump in. What is liking? You guys know what liking is?
It's when you double tap on someone's picture.
On Instagram, maybe.
On Instagram.
Yeah, on Instagram.
And when your TikTok brain releases dopamine.
Neither of you are incorrect.
Two very different approaches.
Oh, wait, is it opiates? It's opiates, actually, is it not? I think dopamine makes you want to seek something, and then when you get it, you release an opiate.
What is it with you talking about opiates?
No, I mean, because that's the brain's pleasure reward system is opiates. That's why you have opioid receptors, is so that you have a... It's an opiate. Like when you say I talk about opiates, like a drug that you'd inject, is just because it attacks or it stimulates the opioid reception in our brain. Opioids are in you. They're not out in the world. They're in you.
They're not in me, man.
No,
they might
no,
be.
No, 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 no.
They're in you. Yes, they are. Shut up. You have opiates
I've
in
never
your
taken
brain
opioids,
like, right now.
Okay. So yeah, that's kind of, that is, other than having opiates, that is pretty right. So we're not going to be talking so much about the brain chemistry of it today. We've covered that a little bit before.
Yeah.
A few times. We're going to be talking more about the psychology of likes and dislikes.
The SciGuys with a PS instead of an S.
I'll have to crack out that logo again.
Oh, no. So I've got a quote here from Tom Vanderbilt, who wrote a book called You May Also Like. It was about liking stuff.
Was it?
It was. Yeah.
Fascinating.
So... Tom says, taste is just a way of filtering the world, of ordering information. I use Michael Pollan's phrase from The Omnivore's Dilemma. When humans do have this capacity to eat everything, how do you decide? I felt like the sheer availability of cultural choices is similar. We all face this new kind of dilemma for how to figure out what we like when the entirety of recorded music, more or less, is available at your phone within seconds. What do I even decide to look for now that everything is available to me?
Wow, that's very true. Absolutely.
I've never thought about this.
Yeah, right? I mean, if you...
That is true.
It is interesting. We have absolutely everything at our fingertips. I mean, the internet. I can watch.
Compared to like how our brains evolved to to understand. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. And not just the not just that, but also foods as well. I mean, yeah, food could be bountiful before, but I could walk to a supermarket and buy anything. I could sit online and I could order from. I could order anything I want from anywhere in the
world. On Amazon.
What makes me decide?
Other brands are available.
I don't have to do that anymore. Don't have to do it. They changed it. What makes you just so makes you decide what it is that you actually like?
Opiates.
Do you guys know? No, stop it with the opiates.
I think it is. I'm not joking. I'm not. I think it is that. You can tell me I'm wrong if I'm wrong. I just, that's what I think.
What is it? If the what is
is it whether it's conducive to your survival?
Well, what is what about if you like if what you like is opiates? Then what makes you decide if you like that?
Opiates.
Because it stimulates your opiate.
Who watches the Watchmen, Luke?
There is no Watchman and no one there to watch it and nothing to be watched.
So, oh, I've missed you.
Oh, this lockdown's made me even right more crazy.
We just turned down his volume if we wanted to.
Oh no, Luke's dead again.
Oh no.
So yeah, again, I'm gonna be talking about the psychology of it. So I'll quickly tell you what likes and dislikes are in this sense. So, as I said, likes are basically just an ordering system for what you're going to go for first. It's sort of a preference, really. Whereas dislikes, or aversions, as they're called in science quite often, are the opposite. They're just things that you avoid.
Good word.
Yeah, aversions.
Anyway,
I'm going to go into a little bit of the history of preferences. Where did they come from?
Where did they go?
Evolution? Yeah.
Well, I mean, everything comes from evolution, doesn't it?
Not rocks.
Well, you don't know that.
Okay.
They might have evolved from less evolved rocks.
They probably looked different a while ago.
Yes. Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah, so Vanderbilt thinks that it's food. Effectively, it is what you mentioned, Luke. It's about survivability. So if you see someone that's eating something, for instance, and they don't die, you think, hey, that thing didn't kill them.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty cool.
Whereas I like that. I can get behind that.
Hey, I like this whole not being dead thing.
Ooh.
Kill me. A+.
Yeah, I'll go for that. Whereas if you know your friend were to eat something and they didn't
drop dead to the floor.
Yeah, straight away. Mm. You'd probably be like,
you might go, don't want to eat that.
Not a fan of that
might
thing.
Avoid that.
No.
If I can.
Usually I'm not fans of things that make my friends drop dead.
No.
No.
No, I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
That is a
unpopular
like
opinion.
Of mine.
Unpopular opinion. But
a like of mine is avoiding things that kill my friends.
Yes. And that's what's so I read a wonderful cartoon about the coronavirus. And
read a cartoon.
Yeah. It's mostly reading, to be honest. It was mostly speech.
I read a wonderful picture book the other day. And The Tiger That Came to Tea. Very inspiring.
Shut up. And it was talking about how like the main difference between like us and say coronavirus is that coronavirus or any kind of virus or bacterium is purely following its genetic code. And in order to change its behavior, it has to write different code. And what's so incredible about us and larger organisms is that because we have a brain, we can change our behavior without having to evolve. And so that's what you're talking about when you're talking about like we see a friend who has this thing and they die. Well, we're able to make that change in behavior and learn from that without having to evolve an aversion to that food over many generations because we have a brain.
That's really true. And you know, something I was going to talk about a little bit later on, but I might bring it up now. It's quite interesting. It's the opposite of that. So things that we have already developed an aversion to, we can decide, actually, we like that now. For instance, say chilies, which are very spicy.
Probably, they're spicy because they don't want us to eat them.
And that's all we do. In fact, we cultivate chilies to be spicier and spicier.
I'm just eating chilies. Don't know what you guys are doing with your lockdown. I'm eating chilies.
I love chilies.
Yeah, I have chilies every day. In fact, I need to sometimes
pretty much every
day. I have chilies in every single day. In fact, most of the time I've got to stop myself from using them in cooking because I like them so much. Like for instance, last night I was making something. I was like, chuck some chili flakes in that. And I was like, no.
Chili flakes.
No.
I like to put chili flakes on like everything.
Oh my God. It's the base of all of my food.
It's basically onion and garlic for me.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
Treat.
And also other things, you know, that are basically rotten.
Like cheese.
I've just made some.
Moldy.
Yeah. Cheese.
I was thinking blue cheese. Yeah.
I've just made some kimchi, which is just fermented cabbage.
Weird.
Yeah, and we eat all that stuff when really we shouldn't like it because it historically it might be dangerous to eat something that's moldy or fermented. Mm. And yet we drink alcohol, we like,
yum yum,
we eat kimchi.
Yeah, but although birds drink alcohol, birds eat fermented fruit to get drunk, like they have a great time.
And they do have a great time, don't they?
I've been down the club on a Friday night. I know what those birds do.
I wonder if that is a thing that's like, is that evolved in them? Are they genetically evolved to enjoy drinking alcohol, or have they passed that information on through their brains? Like they see their bird parent getting drunk, and when they're a bird adult, they're like, yeah.
They continue the cycle of bird abuse. Yeah.
It's just like you and me, Luke. They're like having a drink on Friday, you know?
I don't know. Throughout the entirety of this podcast.
It's probably, so the way that a genetic aversion would evolve is that the individuals that don't like the taste of something or don't like something aren't going to eat it, and they aren't going to die.
Yeah.
So it's not a case. It's not necessarily a case of when a group of animals starts eating something and they start dying. Other animals are like, "Ooh, let's avoid
unless the birds that ate rotting fruit got drunk and procreated more, because you know people do that when they're drunk,
and
then
does.
They pass their genes on more effectively because they got drunk.
That's so true. That is really, and the reason there aren't any bird alcoholics is because the ones that got too drunk just couldn't get it up,
flew into the ocean or something.
Hypothesis.
Don't drink and fly.
Don't drink and fly.
Truer words have never been said. we think that back to this, we think that liking and disliking comes from food. It's similar to attraction, by the way, but generally in the science it's kind of separated, because attraction is more looking for positive traits for procreation to make a viable offspring, whereas liking and disliking is a little more
personal,
it's subjective and personal, and
it keeps you alive as well, you know.
Yeah it does.
It's more immediate than trying to make babies.
So the thing is that ultimately in liking and disliking doesn't necessarily directly lead to the strength of your offspring. So you could like the taste of poison berries, and
you could
not eat too many to kill you.
Yeah,
you know,
once in a while,
like what humans do when we have we eat so many poison things.
Yeah,
I mean everything is poisonous to an extent,
like alcohol.
Yeah, oh there we go, that's it, alcohol's a poison.
We do that.
If we drink it, we just don't drink enough to kill us.
We're stupid.
It reminds me of that story. What was it? It was someone that used this poison in their eyes, or used poison as a medicine and ended up dying from it.
What a surprise!
It was belladonna.
Yeah. So, that was it in the dinosaurs episode. There was a man that used poison as a medicine and ended up dying from poisoning.
Went
from the poison.
Blind and then died.
Yeah. Not the best.
Maybe. No.
We're not very smart, are we?
Slightly hallucinogenic.
Wow, sorry. Don't paint us all with the same brush. That person's not very smart.
I just mean as a culture, we drink alcohol. We eat.
Sure,
we eat,
but like if we drank enough water, we'd die. Like,
yeah, it'd take a lot more water to... it'd take a lot more water to kill you. And you don't see people drinking seawater. Just for fun.
Ah, you've never met my dog.
people being the operative word in that sentence.
My parents' dog is people.
Dogs count as people.
How dare you, Corey? Cancelled.
I apologize. We think that taste was kind of the early mechanism towards liking. But then obviously we evolved, society grew, and things are more complex. So now it's a lot more subjective than just, will these berries kill me? So I was actually going to do an experiment today. But unfortunately, no one in the house has white wine.
Ah, what about the shop? Did you try the shop?
I can't go to the shop because it's not essential. So that's the thing. I'll let you know why anyway. So you guys have had wine before, right?
I have had wine before. yes.
A couple glasses in it.
Why don't you, can you describe the flavor of white wine?
Kind of like vinegar.
In three words.
It's generally quite sweet, usually a bit dry.
Okay, those two are entirely opposites when describing the taste of wine.
But somehow they go together.
Tart.
Uh-huh.
Sour.
Citrusy.
Well, vinegary, but that's like they're both made of grapes, so it's kind of a
citrus
cheat.
Citrus sounds better than vinegar.
I think you just go. I think your wine is just going off.
It's like sweet vinegar.
A bit of mold in there.
It's like it the sweetness. Moldy. The sugar's added to counteract the vinegariness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, can you now describe red wine in similar words? Not similar words. In
similar words. No, I
in
can't.
In some different words. More fruity. No, maybe not.
No, I don't think so.
No, I cannot describe this, Corey. I
think
apologize.
Red wine is famously not fruity.
See, this is
unless
the thing.
You get fruity red wine.
True.
Yeah.
But usually they label it as fruity, don't they?
Yes.
So
we suck at this.
So the reason I've asked you this is because we've done studies on this, and generally, if you give someone a white wine, they start talking about how floral and, yeah, maybe fruity it tastes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Drop some red food coloring in. Totally tasteless. They start talking about how tannic it is. That's a really, really rich red wine. They taste the same.
People who drink wine and think they
oh,
know
that
things
been
are
such
so
a good
stupid.
Well.
Oh, that's, yeah, exactly. I wanted to do it to you. I don't. I wanted to.
Because I definitely would have done that.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
sweet. Mm.
It's the same still, all I had was stupid rose and I was thing like, as when people who claim to be like wine reviewers are told a wine is more expensive and they rate it more highly.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so mad.
I mean, it's the same kind of idea as you go to Waitrose and get your lovely Waitrose finest special grapes. Mwah. Perfect. Pop down the road to Aldi, get the exact same grapes in a different container.
I noticed
it just
this
tastes
when,
worse
at the price.
I noticed this when there was a manufacturing error with all the hummus, with some hummus manufacturer, and like Asda and Tesco and Sainsbury's and Waitrose, they all were like, suddenly we don't have any hummus. And I was like, I wonder why. It's the same hummus. It's just the same hummus.
Oh my God. The thing, yeah, that's the thing. So a lot of taste is just, we just decide something is better because we're told it is. Another thing is, I remember watching a testing factory chicken against factory chicken? Factory farm chicken against free range chicken. Now, people that are more used to free-range chicken will rate free-range chicken more highly, whereas people that are more used to factory hens will rate them more highly. Because it's just what you're used to in that case.
Yeah.
It's not about necessarily what's more expensive. It's about, this is what I'm more used to. And then
but that's not because people are being like, it's not because people are like tricking themselves. It's because we're expecting to taste a thing and you kind of like, your brain is trying to do shortcuts all the time, is it not? So like, is that not fair? Is that not correct?
Well, yeah, kind of. I mean, ultimately, what we kind of think about this is that liking and disliking can be quite subjective. So you kind of fill in the gaps and make up a story for yourself. So if you say, oh, I don't like any wines that are less than £50 a bottle, swap them out. People don't know the difference.
Yeah, sure.
That's why when it comes to wines or anything. Anything where the quality doesn't really increase beyond a certain price point, there's no point in paying more. It doesn't taste any better.
It's a stupid tax.
Yes, it's a stupid... Exactly. Stupid tax. I mean, it's a rich people tax, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you've got the money, you're going to spend it, but it doesn't really make a difference.
It's I really want to this experiment.
Jeremy Corbyn should have come out with this as a campaign idea, shouldn't he? He should have been like... If you vote Labour in, we will put the same wine in every bottle and charge all the rich people for the expensive wine.
That's socialism for you. Okay, so do you guys know who Heston Blumenthal is?
I've heard the name. Oh, he's a cook.
Chef?
Yeah. He's a chef. So he's a sort of chef scientist man. He does a lot of food science with his work. But yeah, he is a chef. He's a famous chef. He did a test wherein he gave people this lovely smoked salmon frozen savory mousse. It was fantastic. Ooh. And they loved it so much more than the smoked salmon ice cream that they gave him, despite the fact that the mousse and the ice cream are the exact same thing. Literally no difference. Again, it just shows you, if you change not even the color of something, just the name.
Just the name of it.
Just the name.
Just present it a bit differently.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And people will say, oh, I like that a lot more. Mm. And the same thing happens with Mexican Coke and American Coke. because
Coca-Cola.
Yeah, so a Mexican. Wait. You know, they're exactly the same, cut with nothing, pure as hell. So Mexican Coca-Cola has sugar on the label, whereas American Coca-Cola says corn syrup sweetened. Now, apparently, the taste is indiscernible. You cannot physically taste the difference, and yet people will still say that Mexican Coke tastes better than regular Coke. Yeah, a lot of taste is down to...
So funny.
I mean, a lot of taste is down to... And liking and disliking taste is down to just...
Is it expectations?
I guess expectations. Or
they put the expectations on the thing you're drinking?
Or that, or the liking something doesn't necessarily just come from the thing itself. So say liking a taste doesn't necessarily come from the taste itself. It could be your perception of the taste. Mm. Similar to this, actually, we can talk about another taste, a taste in art. So liking art, for instance, is not always necessarily about the art itself. Let's talk about Jackson Pollock. You know Jackson Pollock?
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who does the splatters.
Yes.
Now, I could show you a few splatters I've done on a page and say, this is a Jackson Pollock. Yeah. And you'd be like, oh, that's quite good.
All right.
Then when I tell you it's mine, you'd be like, oh. It's a bit rubbish.
Splatters, it?
Yeah, it's not very good. It's just splatters. I mean, so much of this is just down to people attaching nice things
that is
to
mad.
Mediocre things.
Must be really easy.
I genuinely think being an art critic is just the most pointless job.
It's not a job.
It's not. I have decided that this is good and it costs money now.
Sorry to any art critics listening in, but
find a new
your job is pointless.
you're both art critics now because you're criticizing art.
Oh, darn it.
Wow.
But your my opinion doesn't pointless. Matter.
True.
Therefore.
I'm not getting paid.
But that's the thing.
Why have you got a podcast if your opinion doesn't matter, Corey?
I like hearing the sound of my own voice. Obviously.
And he does research. Okay. It's not just my his mistake. Opinion.
Okay. This is mostly a vehicle for me to do research.
Science.
Science, no. Corey.
The podcast.
So, yeah, liking things can be made up is basically the conclusion we've come to. A really funny example of this is, have you ever heard of Van Meegeren? He's a Dutch man.
No.
So he was, he did a lot of art forgery. And he sold actually paintings to the Nazis. And then he was put on trial for selling paintings to the Nazis, which is big bad. Don't want to do that. I think it was treason that he was convicted of.
The Nazis?
Or
by
sell some paintings.
No, selling priceless paintings to Nazis during World War II.
So he's put on trial by his country then?
Yeah, so after World War II ended, he was put on trial by his own country for selling priceless paintings to Nazis.
Right.
And then
what a trial.
Well, yeah, to get out of that, he then said, well, I didn't actually do that because all those paintings were mine. I faked them.
Did they let him off? Did they let him off because he made the Nazis look like idiots?
Oh, no, they didn't let him off. They then tried him for making money under false pretenses.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll drop that trial charge and we will instead do you for fraud.
So this is in November 1947. He was convicted, basically of fraud. And he was sentenced to just a year in jail. As opposed to the many years in jail he was facing for selling paintings to Nazis.
He made the right decision, didn't he?
But then he didn't even serve out the sentence because he died in December of 1947. So,
oh, it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, being honest, that's kind of it's the best, like, screw you. Yeah.
Screw you anyway.
Screw you Nazis, and then screw you my country. I'm dead now.
And also, screw you artists. I mean, he faked a couple hundred year old painting. I've actually got it. I've got one of them here.
Props to him for making convincing fakes, though.
Oh, they're really convincing fakes. So I'll show you one of the paintings that he's done. You can't see the original because it doesn't matter. They're basically the same. So this is what it looks like.
That's pretty good.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, you got that?
Yeah.
You're nodding your head. Yeah. It's very good. Now, this is an interesting one. This one is called Supper at Emmaus. Now, this was in a very, very popular museum. It was one of the most popular paintings there. People would flock to see it. And then obviously the news came out about him faking all those paintings, and it had to be removed from the gallery because people stopped going to it. despite the fact that people were flocking to it before because it's such a wonderful work of art, as soon as they found out it wasn't by the person they thought it was by, they decided it wasn't worth seeing.
That's
so interesting. Someone faked them on a Lisa or something.
So I've got this interview of this man named Dr. Bloom who teaches psychology at Yale. Effectively, he's talking about what makes something art and why people like the things that they like. And he basically just goes into everything that we've gone into. He uses a very nice example of selling George Clooney's jumper.
Okay.
So if I were to try and sell a jumper worn by George Clooney, people would pay a lot of money for it.
They would.
Weird.
So, again, it's got that name attached to it.
Exactly. So that's the thing. Why do they like it? So you then say, okay, well, I'll sell you the same jumper, but you're not allowed to tell anyone that it's George Clooney's. People still pay a lot of money for it.
Would they?
Yeah, they pay a lot, but not as much. They pay less money than they would if they could tell everyone. And then...
I guess like George Clooney fanatics, yeah, definitely would.
And then you say, like, you know, you couldn't resell it or anything. You had to keep it, and people still pay a lot of money for it, a little bit less. And then you say, okay, what if I sold you George Clooney's jumper, but you had to... It was thoroughly washed before it was given to you, and the price just dropped.
Oh, yeah, it would.
Because people,
it's just a clean jumper.
Yeah, whereas so if creepy. You were to then give someone the same jumper, exactly the same jumper, never touched by George Clooney, completely anonymous...
Well, you don't tell them that it's George Clooney's.
Yeah, like, you know, it's the, yeah, exactly. It's exactly the same jumper.
Just a jumper.
With nothing attached to George Clooney. People pay the normal price for a jumper for
people
it.
People are so creepy. That's so strange.
People ascribe, people like this jumper because they associate it with George Clooney.
Yeah.
And the less associated it becomes with George Clooney, the less liked the jumper is. It's got nothing to do with the value of the jumper itself. It's got everything to do with being associated with George Clooney. And what that brings in is that liking things is, again, isn't necessarily about the things themselves. It's about the association.
Mm.
So liking things would generally could come from the taste of them. You know, you could like a taste.
What a tasty jumper. Tasty jumper from George Clooney.
So, I mean, originally when we started liking and disliking things, so for instance, food. Liking and disliking food. You think you dislike the taste of food, but where does that come from? Does that come from, for instance... sour foods generally not being quite as, not having been as good for you and potentially being dangerous. So then sour flavors Maybe. Are genetically encoded to be disliked. Or is it to do with, who knows where it comes from? That's the thing. My point is that this episode is basically just me saying, we don't know anything about liking and disliking.
What? We don't know anything about it?
We know some things. We have theories. But
that is crazy.
But I don't
science,
like some of those
sometimes
theories.
Science is such a so letdown. It's like when I go and watch a video. When I watch a video, see a video on my feed and it goes, what is consciousness or what are dreams? And I'm like, the conclusion to this video will be, I don't know.
We don't know.
Nobody knows. And you're going to spend about 20 minutes going, maybe it's this, maybe it's this, maybe it's this. And at the end, it'll be, we don't know.
That's so true.
Actually, look, I think we spent about 40 minutes doing this. So.
Ah, what is that? God, you are such a little
sorry
tease, aren't you?
No, like I think this is
I've
valuable.
Scientific,
you know,
blue balls now.
Look, the blame the patrons. They were the ones that asked for this. They wanted it. They blue balls you, Luke.
Oh, patrons! We're in a quarantine.
But I think it is interesting to go into all of the different sort of theories. I mean, generally, liking and disliking, as we've said, comes from things being good for you or being bad for you or being associated with nice things. So. Why do we like bad things? Like I've said, I like chilies.
We're not allowed to.
Because
like
we hate
them.
Ourselves.
That's a little bit it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, is it?
Yeah. Okay. So there's two different levels to this. So there's, for instance, violent movies or video games or things like that, where you get to inflict violence or experience like the discomfort of violence or torture or anything like that. That's generally people think that's kind of preparing yourself for. That's your brain's way of like kind of preparing
it's
itself
like playing a game
for a bad
it?
Situation.
It's exposing yourself to something you that may happen in order that when it does happen, it's not the first time you've experienced it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like play fighting in small animals, you know,
like what's
in small
called?
Animals in what they're called babies.
So you're what's the word? Play fighting in babies.
in babies.
I was like,
when one baby just tackles another baby.
in baby animals, you know? Yeah.
I've often wondered whether like people, like, when, if you engage in sort of self-destructive behavior or behavior that is in some way not conducive to your happiness or survival in the long term, I wonder whether it's sort of like, because I experienced a kind of similar thing to this when I kind of went a little bit mad, was I found that different parts of my brain sort of disagreed on things. They disagreed on fundamental things about, like, just about people in my life or about me or about whatever. They're like almost were at war. And I wondered whether basically, like, one part of your brain can dislike another part of your brain and will actively seek out, and when I say dislike, that is imbuing it with a sense of self, which is not really there as an isolated part of the brain, necessarily. But I wondered whether, like, parts of you can be almost at war, and one part of you will seek out a situation that makes another part of you that it doesn't like, that it disagrees with, uncomfortable or unhappy or in some way disadvantages it, kind of cutting off your nose to spite your face type of behavior.
That is a really interesting way of looking at it.
That's what I felt. And I delved into the my own subconscious quite significantly when I went a bit mad. And so, you know, you can't always take firsthand experience to be 100% true, but that's what I felt, was cognitive dissonance, where one part of me and another part of me were fighting, and part one would deliberately seek out unpleasant experiences in order to punish part two,
despite the fact that it punishes itself.
But despite the fact, because the punishment of the other one is more pleasure to it than the pain of the experience.
Wow,
makes sense.
Good lord.
Yeah. That was part of my life, man.
Man, brains are weird. Oh, wow.
Brains aren't good for brains.
The brains don't know what brains are doing, man.
No.
Like, think about it. It bothers me that we don't spring out onto this earth knowing exactly how our brain works, because our brain is doing it. It should know what it's doing.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a computer not being able to tell you what it's doing.
But it can't. You know?
It can't.
Right. Yeah,
you'd have to have another thing to translate what the computer's doing, surely. Like, machine learning things can't tell us what they're doing. We have to have another machine to translate it.
As in, the computer can say, okay, these are all the things that I'm running right now. These are all the... Do you know what I mean? Your computer knows what's going on.
But the thing that's running them can't tell you. It has another section of the processor that oversees what itself is doing.
Yeah, but our brain doesn't have that, is my point.
Well, we don't know. It might do, but it seems like we don't. Yeah.
Switch it on.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the sheer fact
you do, though, because we have self-reflection. We have the ability to reflect upon ourselves and what we're doing and that kind of thing.
We're not very good at
introspection,
though.
I suppose. But
if we
were good at it, then
therapy wouldn't exist. You know?
No.
How introspective is the average person, though?
I don't think terribly.
Not a whole lot.
Yes. True.
How sad.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on from that. So, yeah, I mean, so there's kind of using fiction as a way of training your brain for potentially bad situations. That's why you could like bad things. Mm. But also liking chilies and liking hot baths and things like that. Apparently, it's to do with the relief of when it stops, which I absolutely disagree with.
No.
I don't eat chilies for the nice feeling I get when it goes away. I eat chilies because it feels nice when I...
Yeah.
You know, when you hate yourself, man.
Yes,
but that's
this
weird,
is not news.
I don't necessarily feel when the chili goes away. It just kind of fades out.
Yeah, I forget.
It's like a soft transition out of the chili.
Yeah, I feel when it gets there, man. Like,
so there's not much relief, is there?
And also getting in a hot bath is nice. The pain of getting in a bath, it's just a little too
hot. Uncomfortable when you get out because it's cold out.
Oh yeah, that's horrible.
But no,
yeah,
not for me.
I think they got that backwards. So I did say that we don't know why we like things. That's a little bit of a lie. We have some idea of how we can come to like something. So that's called the mere exposure effect. And that was, basically, it was described by this man named Robert Zajonc.
Zajonc?
Zajonc. He's a psychologist. So this was in 1968, this first article was published. Effectively, the mere exposure effect is just, if you give someone something repeatedly, they're more likely to like it than something that's new. So repeated stimuli are preferred over novel stimuli. Basically, you like something you're used to.
Yeah. Is that why people carry on eating the same things they did when they were growing up?
Yeah, I mean, they like it more. So it's the same reason that, we found this to do with, food, paintings, unfamiliar languages or music. Yeah. You like what you like because you like it. And you continue to seek that stuff out. It's probably why you see a lot of people getting really, really into, say, one kind of like music subculture.
I was just about to say, a lot of people like the music their parents listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because that's what they grew up listening to.
Exactly. So you're exposed to that. I mean, and what they've seen with kids is apparently it takes about 9 exposures to food for them to like it. Because you just give a kid something more and more, then they'll end up liking it.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because there's also a twist to it in that it's not as straight as that. It's not the case of, okay, you don't like eating dog poo? Well, I will continue to feed it to you until you do. Like, continued exposure to something that
is purely negative.
Yeah, unless it's a negative response, can increase the negative response.
Yeah.
And also something that's, say, boring or quite neutral. So apparently the taste of, say, this example is, say, orange juice compared to cola. If you were to have orange juice and Coca-Cola and be repeatedly exposed to both of them, you probably end up liking the Coke more because there's more to the flavor. Whereas orange juice is very straight, it just tastes like orange juice.
Yeah.
So it's something that's more neutral. You could get bored of it. And that happens for, say, melodies. So if you had a short melody that was very simple and didn't really do very much, you'd probably get quite bored of it in comparison to a more complex one. So the mere exposure effect is kind of complicated. You end up having a more positive response to things the more you're exposed to them.
Pop music gets old really quick, but it does. Something like classical music.
Yeah, I mean,
and they don't listen to it as much.
That's the thing.
Sticks around.
Yeah, I mean,
don't get bored of it.
Ultimately, it's interesting because it would only take one small shift to shift pop music, in that you can't go too far out, or people aren't used to it and they don't like it.
Yeah.
The thing is that if you look over the decades, you think, oh, there's a really big difference between 70s music and 80s music and then 90s and noughties. But if you really look at the actual years that each thing came out, it's a very gradual transition between...
It's a gradient.
Yeah, between each thing, because people only like what they like.
Yeah. But with pop music, I've heard that... I read an article a few weeks ago about how pop music is actively bad for you. It's like rotting away at your brain.
Was this written by a Christian mother?
A music critic, maybe?
No.
Music.
Pop music is sort
of... Old art critics there.
Like, it's designed to be as addictive as possible, right? It's designed to be hooking into your brain as quickly as possible. And that, to me, like, I don't know necessarily the neuroscience of it, but that to me is like, if something's designed to hook your brain, it's essentially found like a hack. It's like a virus, right? Mm. And it's got into your psyche as quickly as possible, and your brain doesn't necessarily want it there. And so once you've managed to get rid of it, you won't, it's almost like you gain an immunity to it. Like you'll be less likely to be hooked to the same thing. And so you then get an aversion to it, like you're saying, because it's so good, because it's so like, and then you're like, not again, that was a bad time.
It does the job so well.
Yeah.
I mean, and the thing is that what's really interesting, you say that it's like a virus, like it's been made to like get into your brain. Almost everything nowadays has done that. We've gotten to the point in our history where we basically just get everyone addicted to things to sell it to them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about anything, I mean, Facebook,
social media.
Yeah, Facebook and all kind of social media. You've got all types of like food, fast food.
Sugars.
I mean, just everything. Using algorithms, we kind of figured out how to get people hooked into stuff.
Yeah.
And we're just doing it.
And then you make it easily accessible. So it's like comfortable.
Exactly.
One day, and free. And you make it free.
Yeah.
And ad supported. And then there's no reason to not do it. And one day, the lawmakers are going to catch up with this, and we are going to live in an entirely different world when it is illegal to do that sort of thing.
I mean, it's like biohacking, isn't it?
Yeah, we can't even imagine the world that will exist when we don't allow that anymore.
It is absolutely terrifying that people are able to just hijack your brain. I mean, the fact that YouTube's one goal, and we obviously here we all love YouTube, but YouTube's one goal is keep watching, keep people watching for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. That's all it cares. It doesn't care about your life. It doesn't care about your health. It wants you to watch YouTube videos for as long as possible. So
it promotes videos that people watch longer.
It's ridiculous.
If a video has a lot of people watching all the way through, it'll push that video out to more people.
And because it's tailored to you, and it just knows what you want. I finished watching Steven Universe the other day. And just in the past couple of days, I've watched maybe one or two Steven Universe videos.
Yeah.
That's all that is on my feed now. Yeah, long video essays on Steven Universe, because YouTube knows that I like watching long video essays. It knows that, oh, you must have just finished watching this because you've watched a couple things from that.
Yeah.
Why don't you watch all of these videos?
So and
it's
scary.
It's all that's in. And I think if I was in a slightly more vulnerable place, I didn't have things to.
Oh, yeah.
When I say vulnerable, I mean, I didn't have stuff that I needed to do.
Yeah.
I could just sit and do it.
Do that for fucking hours.
Well, that's what I experienced when I, in my aforementioned going a little bit mad year. I experienced the YouTube algorithm slowly figure that out and offer me more and more messed up stuff. And I essentially sort of, to a certain extent, became like radicalized into like, for a while I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that that it was offering me stuff by David Icke, who's now promoting the 5G coronavirus stuff. And at the time I was watching this stuff where it was like him going, yep, the secret society that runs the world are all shape-shifting lizards. And for a couple of weeks I was like, yep, I'm fairly sure that's true. And that was YouTube. I wouldn't have found that on my own. That was the YouTube algorithm.
If you just let it run, it will just do that. I mean, if you put autoplay on, here's the thing to do, right? Open up an incognito browser. Okay,
all right.
And not you, Luke.
I've done this.
This is just an experiment
for the people at home.
So you can do it now. Okay. Open up an incognito browser, right?
Yeah.
Get on YouTube. Yeah. Go on auto. Make sure the autoplay is turned on. Click on
any video. Basically.
Any video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Search for the most random thing you can. Click it and let autoplay run. And just go back. Like leave it running for maybe.
It'll find its way somewhere.
Yeah, leave it running for maybe about a couple hours.
Happens to me all the time. Because I have a Chromecast in my room, and sometimes I'll fall asleep watching a video, and then it'll just autoplay, and 8 hours later, when I wake up, it'll be something just unrecognizable.
It's ridiculous. When it's music that I've got on, mm-hmm. and I turn off the TV, mm-hmm. and you go back a little bit later, and you see it starts playing all this music. I'm like, this is music that I listen to often, and I know you've come. It doesn't matter where I've come from; it will go back to that kind of music that they know I'm going to listen to. It's
so weird.
And yet YouTube pales in comparison. Absolutely pales in comparison to the worst offender. And it's terrifying. And it's TikTok.
TikTok have got their algorithm down, haven't they?
TikTok is... TikTok's incredible. For what it does, in terms of knowing what you like and what you don't like, mm-hmm. and giving you only things you like. I don't have my own TikTok account. I mean, I do, but I don't actually... I never watch TikToks on my own TikTok account. Mm-hmm. I never do that. I will watch them over other people's shoulders. Mm-hmm. I can still get drawn into TikTok for like an hour or two, mm-hmm. watching over someone's shoulder, mm-hmm. because it's so well curated, and it's just, it knows what you like, and it just shows that to you.
People comment on this all the time because my TikTok feed is 90% cats, funny cat videos.
It's ridiculous. And where the difference is,
like, your whole feed is just cats. I'm like, yeah, I know, because I keep liking them.
But it's not just, the thing is, it's not like that's just inherent of TikTok, because I don't use my own account for videos. Mm-hmm. When I go on mine, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. I skip so many and I can't, but you need to have TikTok for about 2 or 3 days and it knows you.
It will know you.
It's got you down.
The strangest thing as well is that I've just been doing this, right? And I've ended up at a video called How to Set Up a Hot Tub on Your Roof, which is not a thing that I would need to watch if I wasn't planning to
something
do
you
that.
Would watch.
It's like something like, it's a video I would very specifically search for, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's not something that like that I think if someone was like, entertain me, please, I would end up at a hot tub tutorial video. Like,
I don't know. I think watching someone try and set up a hot tub on their roof would be quite entertaining.
Sure. Okay, but the next one is how to set up a filter pump. That's not something you'd like. It's not like they used to have a thing in YouTube called the lean back experience, which is the ability to hit something and then you lean back and you just let it entertain you. And how to set up a swimming pool filter pump is not the lean back entertainment experience I was expecting.
Sounds like a good watch to me.
What was the first video that you clicked on?
Bloody hell, it's a long time ago. It was building the most secret underground house.
See, I can see how you got to the...
Yeah, I can see how you got there.
I just mean that so it's clearly, not...
But it hasn't been that long.
Yeah.
What it's done is it's just it's tried to figure out, I think, like, I mean, it's, it seems like it's tried to figure out, okay, you like building weird stuff, doing weird things.
Home DIY.
Doing weird things that you could do with your home. Mm-hmm. I can see how you could get to...
No, that's not how this is working at all. It's not doing this based on like, oh, you like this. It's doing it based on people who watched this first video first. We ran a random experiment with a million users, and the ones that stayed on the longest watched this one, and then this one, and then this one.
Yeah, so
it's not making a conscious decision of like,
I know it's not making a conscious decision. No, like, if you were to ascribe some kind of personality to it,
yeah,
it would be effectively thinking, okay, yeah, so you've been watching this, which means, okay, I can see the leap. What I'm saying is, I can see the leap between getting from what you put on first.
Yeah.
To putting a hot tub on the roof. I can see how people could be like,
of course,
I'll click on the video of someone putting a hot tub on the roof because I've just watched this.
I agree with you, but I think that machine learning algorithms can throw out much more surprising. It's important that you understand, that other people understand that there's no, it's not necessarily logic going on here, because if you say watched a video, how to set up a hot tub on a roof, and the video immediately after that was like top 10 times sheep fell off of cliffs, and that that resulted in the highest watch time on average, even though there's no connection there whatsoever, that is what the machine learning algorithm would recommend, even though there's no logical jump there.
I think that is true. That was maybe not the best thing of me to say. So effectively, the way that people think of machine learning is often the way people think of evolution, which is one of my biggest pet peeves, which is people say, oh, yes, bats evolved wings to fly because it was beneficial. No, bats evolved wings to fly because they just didn't die. Nothing evolved anything to achieve a purpose. Things only ever evolved things because it didn't kill them. Machine learning algorithms only ever do things because...
Died out,
Is a human concept. It's not a real thing.
Yeah.
The ascription of like cause and effect, like why anything happens, is in our heads. It's not really out there.
That's a fantastic quote. Why is a human concept?
Yeah.
Did you come up with that, Luke?
I did, just now.
Okay.
That's really profound.
Write that down for me.
I'm full of this shit.
I just need to go into my notes app really quick.
Why don't we just I'll tweet it, like a YouTube algorithm, and see what he comes out with.
I'll tweet it and see what people think. Why is a human construct?
Do you know what? That's actually a garden path sentence. This has gone way off track. We'll bring it right back in a second. But this is a garden path sentence, which is one of those things where if you were to read that written down, you'd read it as, why is a human? Why is a human what? Why is a human concept? How can a human be concept? I don't understand.
Why is a human concept?
A garden path sentence is effectively something that tricks your brain into reading it one way when actually it should be read a completely different way.
Yeah.
So there you go. You've just created a very profound quote and also a garden path sentence.
I'm just getting loads of confused replies. Someone replied, why?
Okay, so do you know what? I think that's basically all of the liking and disliking. Did you like the episode? Did you dislike it?
I am indifferent. No, I really liked it. Good choice by the patrons.
Well, don't forget to smash that like button. But what I like to say is my favorite part of the show is coming up next, which is the quick fire quiz round.
Dun 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 dun.
Okay. What is the phenomenon, Luke, by which repeated stimuli are preferred over new stimuli?
What is the phenomenon by which repeated stimuli are preferred over new stimuli? Novelty? Novelty aversion.
Okay, I'll give you the last word of it. It ends in effect.
The novelty aversion effect.
Do you know what? Jamp, hop in for the steal.
Is it? I don't actually know, but is it the sheer exposure effect? Something like that? I don't know.
It's the mere exposure effect. You had the sound. It's like you could remember me saying it, but you couldn't quite remember what it was.
Yeah.
Do you know what? That one's a wash. So let's just use these last two questions, and it'll be a 1-1 sudden death.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So back to Luke. Who first described the mere exposure effect?
James, just now.
Well, no, because I described it.
Oh, I Mia, described the Mia. Sheer, the sheer Mia. Exposure.
Mia. That's who did it, Mia.
No, Mia as in mere exposure. Oh, it's merely exposure.
Mere exposure. Oh, Schumann. Schumann? No. Michael Schumacher? I don't know. James, you have it. Go on, James. You can do it.
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Great.
you repeated his name. You get this.
It was that weird name. Oh, no. No, it was too weird. I've forgotten it. It's like... It's Zorblog.
Robert Zajonc. Robert Zajonc.
Zajonc. Zorblog.
Okay, do you know what? This is the last question. I want you guys to buzz in. So I'm going to ask it to both of you at the same time.
Dun, 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 dun.
I need you both to give me your buzzers. Luke, what's your buzzer?
That was going to be mine.
And Jamp, your buzzer? Those are the... Whatever.
I think you know which one I am.
I think I know which one. Okay, so here's the question. You need to wait till I finish to buzz. What was Heston Blumenthal's other name for smoked salmon ice cream? Jamp.
Oh, is it salmon ice cream?
What's his other name for smoked salmon ice cream?
I thought you said the other one. Smoked salmon...
Oh, no.
I thought you said the other one. Now I've forgotten what it is.
Luke, I'm sorry. Can you come in for the steal?
Luke.
No. You can't listen to anything you say, Corey. God, it was either a souffle or a mousse.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to you, Luke. It was a mousse. Oh, okay, yeah, ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
So... That would be the end of the show, but fortunately, you've got a little bit extra. Jamp, you look terrified, but don't be worried.
This is not the usual programming.
Because we are just going to thank our lovely patrons.
Ah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
We've mentioned them a few times today. They're the people over at patreon.com/SciGuys that chuck in a little bit every month and keep the show running, help us do the great things that we do. And if you hop over to our Patreon, you can get quite a few nice little benefits there. You get to get some extra little bits of episodes that we cut out, maybe some bits that... We're just too good for TV.
Some previews sometimes.
Previews sometimes. You also get to vote on an episode every month, which is what happened this week. You also could get to submit a topic for a vote every month. Lots of lovely perks over there. So head over there and see if you like any of them.
Some bonus episodes floating about.
I'll tell you what, that's probably going to be something that's just going to be put to the patrons because I flubbed probably. All of that. Well, Luke, since you know the patrons so well, why don't you start us off with the first one?
Thank you, Alice Blecker Loyalelion. Great name.
It's a good attempt. Thank you to Anne, my mum. Love you, mum.
But thank you also to Beth, who is not my mum.
Thank you to Brion.
Thank you to Daisy B. Flett.
Thank you to Ella Hellesy.
Thank you, Eve. Rest
thank
in
you
peace.
To George Farron.
Thank you, Hiccup.
Thank you, Landy Manderson.
Thank you, Laura.
Thank you to Luke Cutford.
You're so welcome,
man. Patron.
You're so welcome.
Thank you to my favorite patron, me Standen. I'm joking. I love you all equally.
Thank you, Natalia.
Thank you to Natasha.
Thank you to Omar Garcia.
Thank you, Paul Olson.
Thank you to Phoenix Wilkes.
Thank you to Quinn Hall.
Thank you, Rebecca Egan.
Thank you to Rob Bruce.
And thank you, Tobias Schaeffel.
I think that's
that
Schaeffel.
Is everyone.
That is it.
Thank you all. More this list more. Is getting a little long.
It's longer every time we read it.
No, not. It's never too long, Corey. Never too long.
It's never too long. It's actually a little bit short.
Yes.
What if eventually the reading out the patron names takes a whole episode?
That'll be it.
That'll be it.
Look, I'm gonna love that. One episode a month. Just read out the names.
Just an hour of reading out names.
Let's
the patron vote will just
Corey.
Be
episode
reading out this
230.
Name. Look, it'll get to a point where the vote will just be deciding which names we get to read out. For that
yeah,
monthly
yeah.
episode.
Put your name in a ballot.
But thank you all for being so helpful and helping us out. In the next few weeks, I've got some lovely stuff coming up, which has come straight from you guys, and I'll let you know when that is. You guys should be excited. Thank you for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can support the pod at patreon.com/sideguys or find and contact us at sideguyspod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or send us an email at sideguyspod@gmail.com. You can follow me at NotCorey everywhere.
Follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cupforth everywhere. Goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Ta-ta.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help. You save.